This is a Pinball News production.
Thanks, Rob. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Expo, one more year. Before I go any further, I would like to mention the passing just this week of a legend in pinball, Alvin Gottlieb. I wish I had been able to spend more time with him while I was at D. Gottlieb, but I am very happy to at least have known him and thought of him as a friend. You will be missed, Alvin. And now we will continue the legacy of all those that have come before. This presentation is entitled Pinball in the 21st Century. Well, as most of you know, I don't have a lot of experience designing in the 21st century. Man, am I old. So I have prepared a short synopsis of where pinball and I have crossed paths in the 20th century and into the 21st. Although my first production machine was produced by Gottlieb, I cut my pinball teeth back in 79 when I was hired on at Gameplan. Not suspecting much of anything, I worked in a factory for about a year, being asked only to do my effort at pinball artwork. I worked in pinball before being asked to do my only effort at pinball artwork, Global Warfare. Thankfully, for pinball, it was my last effort. And designing the pin table came into view for me. Gameplan was a relatively small manufacturing company making their way at first with the cocktail pinball machine. They went on to make full-blown upright pinball games and also touched on videos and slot machines. Gameplan was in existence from 1978 to 1985. I made a move over to D. Gottlieb in 1981 as Gameplan had temporarily decided to cease their pinball operations. Gottlieb had such a rich history of machines to enjoy, too. The company started in 1927 and was unfortunately closed in 1984, shortly after being purchased by Coca-Cola. A group of investors were able to get together and purchase the pinball assets from the now closed Milestar, the company having been renamed by Coca-Cola. The new pinball company, Premier Technology, was destined to carry on the Gottlieb legacy. So from 1984 to 1996, Premier continued to produce pinball under the Gottlieb name. I moved over to Williams Bally Midway in 1990 and designed for both the Williams and the Bally label. With years of experience now under my belt, I was able to continue designing successfully until 1996 when WMS decided to downsize their pinball efforts. This pretty much concluded my 20th century era of pinball design, and it looked pretty bleak at that point. So, the following listing covers my pinball design efforts in the 21st century. I had no place to go with this, but I just wanted to keep my hands in designing pinball. It was just a fun thing to do. I did get a job supposedly designing a game for ICE, Innovative Concepts in Entertainment. They're out of just outside of Buffalo, New York. They make a lot of ticket dispensers and the kiddie games. But they decided they wanted to try for a pinball machine. Well, after a so-so effort, the game was cut off and nothing ever became of it. They still own the rights to it. Unfortunately, nothing happened. After that, I did a design of a playfield in 3D graphics for Fox Sports Entertainment and the Major League Baseball All-Star Game in 2005. And if you've ever seen the commercial on television back then, and I think it might even still be available on YouTube, but it's kind of cool. They did a good job. And most of it's what I designed. The artists, of course, get to take their license with it. And then I provided a design for a group of pinball enthusiasts in the UK in 2009, which is still being worked on. As a matter of fact, I understand I got an email this morning from Phil Dixon, who's doing most of the mechanicals over there. And he's got a system from P-Rock that they're going to put in the game and hopes to have it operational hopefully by early next year, which is the best news I've heard about that one so far. And most of the people know here it was the Forbidden Planet tribute. Also, I was fortunate enough to provide a design for Andy Highway's new company, which is coming up, I hope, sometime soon. And now I have signed on at Stern Pinball. That was very unexpected. I'm glad for the opportunity to get back into the pinball design and end of the game, too. This is something I never gave up my passion for. I loved too much just to walk away from it. In my travels, I went from Game Plan to Gottlieb, from Milestar to Premier, Bally and Williams, and now to Stern Pinball. It's a pretty amazing trip for someone who just happened to be in the right place at the right time. I have to say the light at the end of the tunnel looks more like daylight and a lot less like the oncoming train. The 21st century does look brighter for all the pinball machines. A new generation of players is now there. These are people who have no idea what a pinball machine is, but they've been weaned on their PlayStations and Xboxes, which is fine. I love playing good videos, too. They're rediscovering it, and we've got a whole new generation of players, and I think we've got a lot of dedicated people out there that just love to do this. And I do always enjoy talking to everyone at shows like this. I hope I didn't put too many of you to sleep, but I knew it would be a quickie conversation because pinball in the 21st century, for me, hasn't happened yet, but it's on its way. So hold your design ideas. It'll be good to hear from you all. Hopefully we can get that little thing going with Rob. And I'm next on the platter at the Stern Pinball after Star Trek. So you'll be seeing it soon. What is it, right? I forgot. But thanks anyhow. That's about all I got right now. Unfortunately, not even a slideshow today. But thank you for coming. And if anybody's got any questions, I'd be glad to answer it, except you. Learning the procedures at this company. Every company is a little different. The budgets are different. In being spoiled over at Williams, and it was being spoiled. It's like whatever we put on there is pretty much what we got. And now we have to work within a budget, and it's not an unreasonable budget. It's just, it's a budget. And it's hard to say, well, I really like this more than that. But you have to make a choice sometimes. But it's the best game in town. I'd rather be doing this than what I was doing before, designing pumps. Not glamorous, not fun, boring. This is fun. It is glamorous, and it is just a good thing to do. I enjoy myself. Getting up and going to play every day instead of going to work, it's okay. Yes?
Are you going to try to push for license or non-license?
Oh, I push for everything. You have to. If you don't sit there and cry a little bit and make a little noise, then you just tend to get run over. So it's just the name of the game. Yeah, sure, I'd love to do a non-licensed game. I've got a couple ideas in mind. And there are licenses that I'd rather get, too, and we're working on a couple of them. Still working on that Beatles license. That would be fun. Yes? Yes. The game will be out by then. Yeah, the game will be, I think, either January or February. It'll be coming out. Yes.
Were you there with the game plan when they did the cocktail table?
Yeah, that's where I started. I cut my teeth on the cocktail. I walked in there. And I was a casual pinball player before that. Didn't run there to play pinball machines, but I answered an ad in the Chicago Tribune. Somebody wanted to do some troubleshooting on the line with the final games, and that's where I started. I got in there, and it was cocktail pinball, and servicing or troubleshooting a cocktail pinball takes a lot of dexterity, let's say, because you got to bend over like you're tying your shoe most of the day working inside those cocktail machines. But it was fun to do, and it taught me a lot as far as constraints, designing a pin table, because what's on the top doesn't even come close to what's on the bottom. And what you can't do and what you can do. But that was fun. It was a good thing. That Ed Cibula was in charge of the engineering department at the time, and he brought me down to the engineering area to, number one, do the artwork for Global Warfare, which was a 10-off run at a large size game. And like I said, fortunately, that was the only one that I did. And then I stayed down. I helped with Pinball Lizard, which I see downstairs, or in the other room, I should say. And I haven't seen one of those in 20 years, I think. So it's good to see that one. And then I did a design for them called Attila the Hun. And that one went into the morgue, as they called it, because they decided to get out of the pinball industry. Just for a short time. And that's when I made the jump to Gottlieb. And he finally did make the game. Yes? Is there anything that I really wanted to get into a game that I wasn't able to? Right? Yeah. You know, not really. I tried a lot of things before I even decided if it was decent or not to get into a game. The whole presentation I had earlier was, a couple of years ago, about games that weren't produced, was all about experiment. And some of it worked. Some of the pieces from some of those games eventually did make it in. A lot of them didn't. I thought the best thing since sliced bread was going to be slingshots that actually turned sideways and would keep the ball going back and forth into a bunch of drop targets. Didn't work. It went boom, boom, and then there it went. It didn't work like I planned. So that's the way things are sometimes. But I built it to try it. The Congo, the gorilla? The gorilla was originally supposed to be something that jumped out of the play field and would actually battle you with your pinballs. Way too expensive. Way too expensive. And the way to kill the gorilla as he was spinning around was to shoot him in the back. And he would capture the ball, pull it down, and then kick it back out. So we decided the next best thing is we got this beautiful gorilla sculpt, and it was done by Stan Winston himself, by the way. He donated it. It was very nice of him. And we made a lower play field. And I said, well, you know, I got a window that's going to fit that. Only we turned it over. This is the creature window. Just turned around. And that's anything else? Really, it was. You know, I keep contact with most of the fellas that I knew in the industry, especially through this show. I would come every year, at least for the autograph session, and touch base with all of the other designers and stuff. And I knew John Borg was already there because he had been there and off and then back there again. But he was there for a long time. And John and I go back to Premier because we worked together there. And I found out that Steve Ritchie had done a game or two for them, left, and then came back again full time. And George Gomez was involved in designing a couple of games. And then I heard through the grapevine that George decided that he would rather do more vice presidential stuff and go find another game designer. And fortunately for me, Steve and John both gave the thumbs up to me. And George came over and asked me if I wanted to come play. So I said, sure. And that's what happened. It was nice. It was out of the blue, so it was just a shock. Glad to be there. Very glad. Anybody else? Yeah. Get out of here. John. Oh, okay. My favorite Premier game and my favorite Williams game. My favorite Williams game has to be The Creature because it just came out so well. It was the music, I think, that just topped it off for me, getting all that old rock and roll in there. And when I saw we used to bring and set up all the new videos and pinballs at what we call the bottom of the stairs. And there was about a half a dozen machines there. And when the girls that come in from doing the manuals and stuff would sit there and play the new game sometimes, we'd catch them. When they saw them dancing in front of the machine, I says, I think we got a hit. And they were actually enjoying the music so much. So that was fun. Now, my favorite premier game, that's tough because I had a lot of, I liked a lot of games over there. I liked Genesis. I liked the idea behind it, the metamorphosis of the robot. And then we struck a chord and tried to do takeoffs on popular themes like Hollywood Heat was a takeoff on Miami Vice, and Gold Wings was a takeoff on Top Gun. And that was a lot of fun to do. TX Sector was kind of an original one, too, which I understand is enjoying some little bit of resurgence here of popularity, which I'm happy to see. Yeah. Will there be a Stone Daddy's pinball machine? He's seen our video. I'm in a group. I play rhythm guitar and I sing. And we've got a couple of other good singers and good lead player guitars. And we sound pretty good. We did a benefit last week or a week before at the House of Blues for ALTSO, A-L-T-S-O. It's a leg to stand on. It's a benefit for children who have lost limbs. And we're providing money, the funds, to get artificial limbs for them. But it was a lot of fun to be at the House of Blues in any case. You can't go wrong there. It looks good on the resume. Okay, I'm back. Well, you know what? I went in through the back door. I really consider that, well, the way I came into it as the back door. I had no idea that I wanted to be a pinball designer. I just went in to do a job, and I enjoyed troubleshooting the games. That was fun for me, and it really segued into designing the table itself. And I've always been fascinated by geometry. It's the only thing I got A's and B's in high school. Algebra was not so good. But it seemed like a perfect match for me when I started doing a layout of a game. And I can see the progression of my designs through the years, too. It just takes time and effort. Make one of your own. Go ahead, do it. Take a game that exists and use the rules that are in there and just design a new table for it. That'd be the easiest way to start out, and you've got a full-fledged pinball machine for yourself. Take pictures, take movies. It'll be fun. Anybody else? Okay, Dave.
I'm interested in the experience in 5 years of patent. Are you trying to develop any license in the
I think, I don't know, to be honest with you, but I think patents kind of define themselves. I know they did at Williams, although they were a little patent happy. And Stern will go after something, I think, if it's unique enough. But actually, you know, and nowadays, there's no competition right now. I mean, Jersey Jack, I'm glad to see there is somebody out there making pinball machines. But it wasn't like it was before, when Bally was a separate entity from Williams and Gottlieb was there. The competition was fierce, and there was a finite market. And a lot of it was overseas. A lot of it was in France and Germany. And everybody fought for their space, distributors included, and even domestic. So I don't think there's that much of a passion to seek patents anymore, but it's my personal opinion. I'm not sure. So don't take that as a yes or a no. Yeah. My favorite game, for what? Before 1980. 1980. That was when I started. Before 1990, maybe an early game that I liked. Oh, any game. Okay, not mine. Okay, I always liked Steve Ritchie's Firepower. That is always one of my favorite games. I could sit there and just beat on it for hours. But he knows that. Are you here, Steve? Are you hiding? No, he's not here. Yes?
Are you going to be, or do you think you're going to be doing any new special design lines for the home market? Do you look at that as a different account than you had 20 years ago?
For the home market? Stern has a product they are test marketing now in some specific stores. I'm not really sure what. John, you have any answers on this one? What's the name of that store that they're going through? And they're just they're home games. There's two of them. There's a Transformers and an Avengers. But they're simple down, and they're full-size pins, but they're just made as small as possible.
Actually, I make another route for the professional table.
Okay. Not specifically for home use, no. Although some of the LEs probably would find a difficult place to live on the route because there's a lot of extra nice things on them. So if we were going to do something, it would be like on an LE. And there again, we can't tell you not to put it out, so it's got to be secured in some manner. Putting a plastic side on a cabinet, you know, would just spell death. People would go in there with knives and saws and stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of easy way to destroy a game when you really want to. Yeah, no, nothing specific. Although there are so many parts being made as aftermarket add-ons, I think it's great. Some of these things are fantastic. I saw the colored DMD on the Creature from the Black Lagoon. I almost want to go out and buy another game just to put one in. It looks great. It's fantastic. It's a lot of hours, a lot of labor in those, and it makes the hobby viable still, I think. It's a good thing to do. Yeah. Oh, really? I knew it was a sequel, but I didn't know it was the only one.
So, along those lines, a sequel to Creatures of the Black Lagoon, you want to do it, or think you can convince Stern that it could be a popular license?
That's hard to do right now, because we're looking at licensing very popular items. And I even asked about doing the Forbidden Planet. And got kind of a lukewarm reception. And I understand their thoughts. They've got a successful formula. They're selling games. And they're good games. I can't argue with that. It would be nice if we could do like we did in the old days. I got an idea. I'm going to do a game off of a 1953 black and white movie. And what are you, nuts? And then after I showed them what I wanted to do, they go, oh, that might be cool. And we experimented with it. We actually had comic books, 3D comic books, that I cut up and put down on the playfield, thinking possibly we would have a glasses dispenser on the machine. So you would play with your red, green, anaglyph glasses, which would have been kind of neat, but didn't work. It was a bad idea. Yes? Yeah, I saw that out there.
It was popped up in Michigan. I put a lot of tournaments there, you know, a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are starting to get familiar with the rule set of that game. So it's kind of a real old game. And I think it's one of the best games of the time.
Yeah, it was low production and low budget. Yeah, I was lucky to get a ball release mechanism in there so I could get two-ball, multi-ball out of it. Not that one. Which one was Raven. Raven was a straight-out tribute to Firepower. I love that game. Raven came out pretty good, too. I like the new artwork on the back glass, too. Have you seen that one? Yes, exactly. Yes. You had it right the first time. This is me learning again, too. Never had an experience in trying to make three different models with three different price tags. So I figured, let's just shoot for the moon, put everything in the kitchen sink on there, and then we'll see how expensive it is. And everybody went, oh, my God, look at this. We can't do that. I said, yeah, well, okay, well, we can get rid of this, and this one can go. So it's stripped down to a pro model, but the play field is still the same, which I was very concerned about because I wanted the pro to be a lot of fun and to shoot just as well as the LE and the premium. And we ended up with just that right now. So I'm happy with the game, with the way the game shoots. That's about all I can tell you about it. Okay, a couple more. First, the close guy. It's in the works. It's a lot more work, a huge amount of work to fill up that LED rather than the DMD. DMD, we got a dot matrix to define. It's four different shades of gray. And that in itself is a two-man job sometimes. Putting an LCD screen up there and filling it up with nice graphics, I mean, so it's pleasant enough, is a huge undertaking. Well, look at Wizard of Oz. It's nice, but, you know, the display could have been filled a little more. But I understand totally why it's not. It's just a lot of work. So I don't know if that's going to come next model after, whenever. Yes, Rob?
I remember following Premier during this time that either you or other people in that manager always say how you're that such an influence on your design or the amount of games that you're producing in that part of the world. Is that still the case or it's not what you changed?
Yeah, no, it's, I'm not going to say it's not a factor. It's nice to please the Europeans now because they still can buy a lot of games. France, for instance, I don't think ever lost the passion. They still love to buy pinball machines. So if we give them something that they really like, they're going to be very happy and maybe order some more. They did have some influence even at the height of games. Judge Dredd is one that I will wave a flag for because the planet that the kit is out now for to capture the ball and keep them roaming around was not manufactured that way because Germany was afraid that these balls were going to get stuck there and, you know, and they'll have a bad game. So we made it with them falling out so they could just fall out. And only the last one in stayed and went around to the crane. So, yeah, they do have influence. Anyone else? Oh, there's one. Steve.
When it's back to the end of the series, where they're using glass or back glass, and then the pencil, is that a hard pencil?
Yeah, it was at Premiere, and the first one was Rock. And it wasn't a photographic back glass. It was an artwork translite. And we put the fluorescent tube in back of it, which is really, really bad. I don't like them. But at the time, we were going to try something different. And to print those was a lot easier than getting everything silkscreen. And they're a lot easier to handle. We just get a piece of safety glass and put in something that was offset printed in the back. And you learn how to print, too, for transference of shadows and color, make it shine bright. So Rock was the first one, and I don't remember what was after that. Yes, yeah, that tag team was. I had pretty much both of those Whitewoods operational, and we knew we were going to go with the new look on one or the other. And we talked about it, and I was asked, well, which playfield do you think, which one do you like better? And I picked the tag team playfield, not knowing it was going to be the tag team. He says, okay, well, we'll go with that one first, and we'll leave the other one, which was Rock. And I got yelled at for not having any jet bumpers on Rock by Steve Ritchie. But that's okay. It was a friendly yell.
What were your thoughts on the prototype back then?
Back then, I thought it was something new, something kind of neat. I liked the Hollywood Heat one. I mean, just the look of it was cool, I thought. Gold Wings also, I thought that came out nice. But it did lose some of its magic. You know, we didn't mirror the glass any longer. Using it for a spell out became a project if you wanted to do it. But we didn't. Yeah, I thought it was just something to do at the time. It was nice. It was different. And it made those games that much more unique. We introduced rock. We introduced a lot of music with that. And we had just brought in the alphanumerics on the Chicago Cubs, which was another innovation that we were able to do. And that's about it on that. Okay. No. It's called dollar bills. No, we knew we don't wanted that. I wanted Miami Vice. You know, let's do it right. No, that costs too much. The only one I was able to talk him into was the Chicago Cubs. I think that was one of the only licenses we actually finished up actually getting a license. And then we couldn't get anybody's likeness in there. Rick Sutcliffe turned into this other guy. I don't know who he was. But we couldn't do that either. So it just had to be a generic Chicago Cubs, which was fun to do because I'm a Cubs fan. Don't hit me. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cocktail pinball. I thought I had saw the last of those when I left Game Plan. Apparently not. There was a company called International Concepts that approached Gil Pollack and wanted to know if they would be willing to design them a pinball machine, a cocktail pinball machine. They had their own unique method of selling them. They were actually trying to sell franchise areas. And here's your machine, and here's your area. No one will get another cocktail machine in this area. Well, we know how that works out. Somebody always has to get their foot over the line a little bit. But that wasn't our problem. So I was asked to do a cocktail machine. I says, yeah, let's do it. So first thing you do, grab a cocktail machine and copy it, which is exactly what we did. We went and got a game plan cocktail machine, copied the cabinet almost identically, tried to find a place to hang all the boards on the inside, which fortunately did fit, and I did a play field, which was Night Moves, and we put the alphanumeric display right in the play field rather than in the bottom arch, which Game Plan was doing with theirs. And then I got a chance to do another one. I said, I'm going to try and do this one a little better. So we moved the flippers over, get the shots a little narrower, because it's such a wide board, it's impossible to hit the side shots. So I moved the flippers over to the right, put one on the left, put one up on the right side, put multi-ball in it, which was something that hadn't been done. And that one came out pretty good. I'd like to get one of those myself someday, put it in there, keep it at home. That was Caribbean Cruise, right? Okay, go ahead. I'm here for the duration, so I'll answer your questions.
You always like doing two levels.
Well, I like to do it once in a while. If there's a reason for the two levels, yeah, I like it. I did a two-level design on Forbidden Planet, and the reason those bumpers, which that's all that's on the upper level, pretty much, are up is because there's a habit trail going on underneath with ball guides. And for me, that's a reason enough to jack that play field up. And we also made the upper level transparent so you can see the ball through the upper level. Spirit? Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I'm just saying why have a second level. There's always got to be a reason, because most of the time, if you look at it, you can drop the second level down and have the same machine, maybe with a gate or something just to control it. Yes?
Is there any game or TV
sure that after a particular pin was released, you said, oh my gosh, I should have done this differently, or wanted to totally
change? Yeah, I have to think about that. Well, I wasn't too enamored over the skill shot on Bright a Pinbot. It was just hard, and it was very hard. You couldn't really get a feel for it. But, I mean, it's small stuff, too. Most of the things that we ended up going to production with got played a lot, down to the point where we had a three-minute game just about every time. And, of course, some were good, some were bad, but the average came down to about 3 minutes. And so that was a lot of man hours on the game, and so we were able to discover whether this unit or that unit, which was new on that piece, was any good or not. And sometimes it changed. Not often, but sometimes it did. Yes? Okay. I'll give you one for now, the one I'm working on now. I got in there in May. We decided almost immediately what I was going to work on. And I was happy with it. And I've got an operational Whitewood now. And May, June, July, August, September. And that's just to get the Whitewood, okay? And now the artwork begins. The music begins. It's all a nice marriage now of everything together. So it takes a while. At Williams, we had pretty much a year, maybe a little more, on each model, which is really a luxury because we had our own discrete teams that everybody was just working in one direction. And the only thing that stopped us was memory. We ran out of space. But it was a great thing. It was a wonderful experience to have. Now it's also memory and budget, too. So it's a little different, but it's still great. Still great. Yeah. Who's going to do the artwork? I can't tell you. John Yowski is going to be involved. But the main artist, I can't tell you who it is. It would give away the game. Which I can't talk about. Okay. Okay, guys. Well, thank you very much. I hope that I answered all your questions. I enjoy being here.